Joining us now are Alvin and Larry Ubell, the gurus of How To, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York, USA. And they visit us regularly to dispense advice, answer your questions. What else?
It's our punishment.
It's your punishment for what? For having sinned in an earlier life?
Yes.
And give you our philosophy of building and construction.
And also to challenge you, because every visit is accompanied by a quiz.
Yes.
And you have one here this week as well. And we'll get to that in just a moment. Before we get to the quiz and before we get to calls, our number here, 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or also on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate. You have any right now, I guess the big thing is air conditioners and related matters, keeping cool.
July was a hot month. Let's not kid ourselves. And
it was also a wet month.
It was wet, but it was
and high
hot.
Humidity, which also means a lot of air conditioning.
That's right. When you're trying to pump out all that moisture from your house, and those air conditioning units are running a lot, and as a result, the filter, which is not really for us consumers, it's for the air conditioning to function properly. That's why the filter is probably filled with schmutz. And it has to be cleaned out or replaced, or whatever it is.
Schmutz is a technical word.
It's an industry term. It means dirt.
Okay. You know, for all those who don't know.
Okay. Well, it means a wide variety of kinds of dirts, right?
Right.
That word has become part of the vernacular.
Okay. Now, do air conditioners do the same job that dehumidifiers do?
Yes, they do. The only difference is that a dehumidifier doesn't cool the room. An air conditioner does pull out all the moisture and throws it outside. With a dehumidifier, the warm air coming off the compressor is actual – the air coming off of the cooling air that cools the room after it takes the moisture out is then thrown over the compressor coils to cool them back down again. So you have this – it's basically a car – on a treadmill doing nothing, but it's taking out the humidity. Yeah.
And why is that preferable in some instances to having an air conditioner?
Because air conditioners will sometimes cool off the air too much and make the place clammy. And so when you're trying to just pull the moisture out of the air, you don't want the place colder, especially if you're dehumidifying in the wintertime.
Or you're doing it in your basement.
Right.
Yeah, it's an interesting device, and it really works very well. Something that if you can keep that relative humidity down in your basement or wherever it is below 50%, you won't have mold growth.
Yes,
and that's an important factor also.
But I want to swing right back to the air conditioning filters. The reason we're bringing this up is that because it's been so hot and because it's been so humid, people tend to only clean their filters once a year, especially in their wall units or window units. And I think you might want to take a look at it, because if it's clean, it will function better.
So you take it out. It's usually pretty easy to take out.
Yes.
And then put a little dishwasher detergent on it.
Dishwasher, shampoo, and even ivory, any kind of soap. You know, if you use it on your hands, it's not going to hurt on your body. It won't hurt the filters.
Yes.
And just get the dirt out of it and then just put it back. And if it's
wet?
It can be wet, yeah. But on the disposable filters, on the disposable filters for central units, you might want to take a look at those also.
If you hold that filter up to the light and the light doesn't come through, it's dirty. It's time to get rid of it.
Well, you can you can feel the dirt. And when you wet it, it kind of rolls off, doesn't it?
We're talking about the fixed units.
Oh.
You know, something that is in a wire mesh sometimes, and it's rigid material. That you can't wash. You got to throw it away.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted, which actually this is something that came up just recently, is that there's a lot of changeover from the way apartments and co-ops and condos are being constructed in the sense of heating and air conditioning. These days, people are buying condo or co-op units with the thought that, oh, I don't have to worry about heating anymore, and I don't have to worry about hot water anymore or air conditioning for that matter, because it's just supplied.
Well, they have central air.
Right. But a lot of units, I did this inspection for a couple, and they called me up and they say, well, the heating system's not working. And I, you know, immediately I look at my report. Maybe I missed something, blah, blah, blah. And I go back there, and this is an individual unit, which I remember, individual unit, which means now they are still responsible for maintaining that. And it turned out it was an electronic unit with a computer, and the electricity went off, and it didn't restart itself, and the computer had to be rebooted, and there was a button. And if you own this equipment, my point is you need to become as familiar with it if it was a house.
Now, if you have central air, do you need to worry about filters? Or
Central air, if you have
central air. I wouldn't even know where a filter would be in a central air system.
Well, the central air conditioning unit is people that live in one- and two-family houses sometimes would have a compressor that's on the outside of the building or somewhere, and then they'll have an air handler and an evaporator coil inside the building. At the evaporator coil, and that's where the air handler is, that's where they'll have a filter. That area is sucking the warm air out of the building. It filters it before it goes through the what they call the evaporator coil, because the evaporator coil is going to be wet, also causing condensation. That wetness will grab hold of dirt and build it up. So you have to filter that air before that air goes over those.
So the answer to the question is yes, there is a filter.
Exactly.
And you have to find it.
Yes, but now here's the thing. A lot of units have the filter right in the air handler housing, and I'm not a big fan of that. I like the filter to be in the air register or the grill, the return air grill. That way you don't have to go to the basement. You can just go up to that grill, slide down the two handles, tilt it out, pull the filter out, throw it away, and put a new filter in and push it back into place.
And
that also keeps the ductwork clean also.
Yes.
Should we give the quiz?
Oh, we have a quiz, right. This is an interesting quiz I came across the other day, and I thought the question is, name the hand tool that was used to dress and shape soft stone before the modern machine age. In other words, they had to have a way of making all of those stones that built the pyramids and to make them square and cubical and rectangular.
And people came up with the same solutions around the world?
Yeah, pretty much. That's
the
a
Aztecs
tool.
And the Egyptians?
Yeah,
even
the Mexicans,
the Mesopotamians.
Yeah, even the Mexicans
Chinese. How do you think they built that stone
pyramid,
wall?
When they built the pyramid to Quetzalcoatl, you know, they had to shape those things out. So they had this kind of a tool or something similar to that in order to shape the tool. And we're looking for the name. By the way, it has two names. So
these are English names. These are not Nahuatl names or Chinese names.
Well, it's the name Egyptian. The name that popped up in an architectural dictionary, and so I'm stuck with it.
Okay, in case you think you know the answer, the number here, 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. We got a lot of people already calling in with questions. Should we get to a few of them?
Let's satisfy them.
First, a reminder that I'm talking with the gurus of how to, Alvin and Larry Ubell. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org, our number 212-433-9692. Our first caller is Bob from Regal Park, Queens. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Great show. I'd like to ask a question. I had an appointment today with National Grid. The purpose was they were supposed to check my gas meter. Mm-hmm. I've owned this house for 17 years. The 1925 wood-framed house, Regal Park.
Yeah.
You could not find the gas meter. I was wondering if you guys know where this gas meter could be. And he also indicated, supposedly, if he can't find National Grid, I'm supposed to break walls down to look for this mystery meter.
Well, I have two questions. First of all, one major question. Have they been sending you a bill for the fuel that you've been consuming?
Oh, absolutely.
But it's always estimated, isn't it?
I'd be getting. No, and nobody ever comes to check my meter because I don't have a meter.
Well, the meter has to be somewhere, and it could have a remote control device that...
Not remote control, remote transmitter.
Remote transmitter. Thank you for correcting me.
And since I've owned it for 17 years, nobody ever came and put a remote transmitter in my house or outside the house.
Now, what they've been doing is, for many people who don't have the remote transmitter, they send you a little
an estimated
thing where you have to fill out what your
meter
says.
But they do have to
mail it to them.
But they do have to read it at least once a year to reconcile their books. I mean, like even my house where I actually have a meter with a remote transmitter, every other month is estimated. So they don't even drive down the street every month. They drive down every other month, and then they reconcile every other month because they're pretty sure what my usage is. Now, I have to say with this individual, you would have to locate – this is probably at the front of your building. Do you know where your water main is?
I know where the water main is, and I have nothing. I've never seen it myself. I've been here for 17 years.
You know what?
It's got to be there.
It could be buried in a vault.
The meter has to be there somewhere. It's just that no one knows how to look for it, and that's the problem. I mean, I will sometimes spend 15, 20 minutes searching a house to find the water main, the sewer main, the electrical service, and all that. You just have to – it has to be there somewhere, or – they're sending you a bill based on someone else's meter that's in some other building. Let me ask you a question. Is this a semi-attached building?
No, absolutely not. This is a wood frame colonial house.
Separated house, huh?
Wood frame.
Because I've had inspections where the meter was next door in a semi-attached or attached. This would have to be investigated. But the person that they
sent... I would invite National Grid in and say, you find it.
That's right.
Was the National Grid guy there?
He came. I had a special appointment, and he came. Went to my basement. He says, "I can't find it. I'm going to send someone else to the future. But if we can't find it, I'm responsible for breaking walls to find this missing meter."
That's not true. First of all, when they first installed the meter, wherever that may be, they mark on their paper where that meter is on a small little diagram of your house. And they say where it is located. And they have those papers. If they lost those papers, or by chance your predecessor of the house encapsulated that meter someplace, then you may have to pay for it.
But I also have to say one other thing. Are you getting a bill every month?
Absolutely.
Yeah, then who cares where the meter is?
Well, because they start giving you a hard time. It's not like the good old days with Brooklyn Union Gas Company.
Right.
National Grid is an international company.
It's a British company.
And what they do is if you have to have a meter reading, you get a robocall the day before telling you that somebody's going to be at your house at a time, of course, when you're at work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Direct from London.
Yeah. Thank you for calling us. We go now to Samuel from Brooklyn. Hi, Samuel.
Hi, how are you? Good morning.
What's
Thanks
up?
For
Good morning.
My call. This is my problem. I live in an apartment in a very old farmhouse. It's over 100 years old. Mm-hmm. And what they did was, in one room, they basically put the wiring through the gas lines.
Yeah.
And so what happens is there's no switch for this room for the electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I got around it was I put in a ceiling fan, which I wanted in the room anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed me to have a switch to turn on and off the electricity.
Right.
Now what has happened is the switch for the actual fan piece wore out.
Right.
So I had to replace it. So
right.
I've actually done it before and I had no problem. But what I did was I went to a store which sold me a three-wire switch.
Right.
However, there were four wires in the original one.
Right, because you got high, low, I mean high, medium,
high, low,
and low.
Medium, and off.
And then the common, yeah.
Right. So what happened was when I tried to install it, I messed up my wiring. I don't know which goes where anymore.
Okay.
So I bought the right one afterward, and now I'm trying to rework out how to wire this.
Well, the problem is, and I have to tell you, I just experienced this, is that you really do need to get that four-wire switch back.
I got another one.
You got another four-wire
switch.
Well, I have to tell you, a little trial and error, but you know the only problem is that normally when a fan...
Won't he blow a fuse
no.
if he gets it wrong?
No. Normally
no,
when
circuit breakers. The house has been rewired,
yeah.
Except this one room still has the old wiring part
right.
to it.
Let me get to my point. The thing is that the fan usually operates, it's off, high, medium, low, and back to off. The thing is, if you mix up the wiring, it may end up be low, medium, high, or high, low, medium. That's the only thing that'll happen is that the fan speeds will be out of order. But it will still function as long as you do get the common one right to the right place. That's the important thing.
Okay, thank you so much for your call.
But this happens quite often. But I want to tell people a trick. Before you take something apart, Take your smartphone out and take a picture of it. And that way you know how to put it back together again. I do it all the time. I took a lock apart, an old-style lock that had to be reversed. I took a picture of it first. Then I knew where all the pieces went back. It's a way to do that.
We have a number of people who have called in with their thoughts on the answer to your quiz. Name the hand tool that was used to dress and shape soft stone before the modern machine age. And I thought that I would put them on the air, beginning with Paul from Manhattan. Hi, Paul. What do you think it is?
I was wondering if it was an ADZ, an ADZ.
No, that's for wood. That's a device that you chop and face off pieces of timbers in order to make log cabins and stuff like that.
So an ADZ is not the answer.
No.
Okay. Let us now go to Brian from Manhattan.
I assume either a rasp or a file.
A rasp is a very heavy-duty file.
I usually use both every day.
Usually for metal or something like that. And a file is for finer work. And I use
both every day.
Well, we're not just talking to you, by the way. the thing is that what we're looking for here is a type of hand tool that's for shaping the actual big stones themselves.
It's actually the type of sandstones like limestone, brownstone, stones that are soft, not like granite or something like that. That's a hard type of stone. That's almost like what they call igneous rock, and you got to use different kinds of tools for that.
By the way, don't feel bad. This is a hard one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I usually know the answer because I'm brilliant. And I didn't know the answer. No, I never know the answer. But this one, I didn't even know the answer less than I didn't know the answer on other ones.
We both say you're brilliant.
He didn't even know the answer after he read the answer.
That's right. we're going to go to a break now. And when we come back, more of your calls to the Gurus of How To, Al and Larry Abell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And when we come back, I will read some of those questions that people have been writing in. But first, some very important announcements. And we're back with the Gurus of How To, Al and Larry Abell. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. We are also hoping that you'll write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Twitter or Facebook. And Roland on Twitter asks, what's the most effective way to remove paint or stain from a deck so that it can be restained in natural wood tone?
Well, if it's a wood deck, you could steam clean it off. They have steam machines that could take off the thing. Sometimes it depends upon what kind of paint it is. There is some paint removers that are washable with actual hose water if it's a wood deck outside.
Wouldn't steaming be expensive?
Steam cleaning it, well, it actually makes a nice job because it really cleans the wood off. And then also what happens is the wood has what they call a hairing process. The wood has a fur to it after you steam clean it, and you just take a little bit of sandpaper and go over it, and it makes it really smooth.
But it also goes deep into. Doesn't stain go into the wood? So you've got to sand it off a lot.
Yeah, you could actually get an industrial sander that people use for indoor sanding, and do your deck with that. Also, I'm actually considering doing that to my deck because after it being sitting there for almost 26 years, it's kind of a little rough now. So I'm going to go get an industrial sander.
Is it that long?
It's been that long, and it needs a little bit. I need to fix some of the boards and sand it down and I'll have a new finish again. So that actually works well also. Also, they can do the good old, age-old way of just getting on their hands and knees with scrapers and scrape.
Yeah, but if the thing has a little bit of a discolorization from the stain and everything else, just some actually chlorine bleach and a little liquid detergent to just brush it on, and you'll have the wood will be almost like whitish, and then you could stain it or don't stain it.
But there's also just make sure one thing before you do any of these things, make sure you realize what's below it. Because you don't want to, you know, if there's like people sitting there or you have your beautiful garden set and you just thrown some bleach on it. So be a little aware of what.
Or you'll be bleaching grass underneath.
It's kind of like the guy goes hunting for deer, misses a deer, and then kills his buddy. You know, you got to know what's beyond what you're doing.
But then you become vice president. Amelia in Park Slope asks, I live on the top floor of an old brownstone, and in the winter, it's unbearably hot, and I'd like to turn off my radiators completely, but the controls for the radiators have been removed. I was thinking of enclosing the radiator in our bedroom with foil-backed insulation foam to prevent the heat from entering the room. Is that safe, or what would you recommend?
Wow. Well, the first thing would be, this is a rental?
I got to know what kind of radiator.
I don't know. I'm just reading this.
Yes. Okay.
She lives on the top floor of an old brownstone. I'm assuming it's a rental.
Rental, yeah. Well, one of the things is to complain to the landlord to put the valves back. The other one, if it's a steam radiator, they can actually, if they remove the steam valve that's at the end of it where it vents and replace it with a plug, therefore, no steam, no air can come out of the radiator, and therefore it can't fill up with steam.
Now, can't you just get a plumber in there and have those controls put back on?
Yes,
well,
but
you could also put those little, by the way, those little steam valves can be put, the steam valve can be put on with a valve that you could turn them on and turn them off.
Yeah, that's true, too.
There's small little valves that you can buy specifically for that, that if the valve doesn't evacuate the air inside the radiator, two things can't occupy the same place at the same time. The radiator will not get hot.
But the other thing is, yes, she can get a plumber in there, but if it doesn't belong to her, that's kind of violating her lease agreement of changing the building's equipment without the landlord's permission.
That's right.
So that's one of the reasons why that any of these things, but the changing the air vent or putting on a valve on the air vent would probably work well.
Yes.
Steve in Carnegie Hall asked, what's the best tool for removing grout from between shower tools? My shower stall has narrow spaces between the tiles in my 1939 building, and all the tools seem to be too wide or too coarse, and I don't want to damage the tiles.
Well, Carnegie Hall, I was going to say practice, but...
He said Carnegie Hill.
Oh, Hill. I thought you said Carnegie Hall.
Maybe I said Hall.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just practice
a little then.
I'm
still at the first grade level of learning how to read.
Yes.
Well, they have in quality hardware stores, they do have grout tools that are like a pick that, or with like almost like a saw edge to it that goes right inside the joint places where grout could go in. And usually what I do is I usually use an ice pick.
Or actually thinner than that would actually be get a hacksaw blade.
A hacksaw blade is very good.
And you can break it so you have a bunch of little ones and just drag it out with that, with the teeth in the right direction. I would use a hacksaw blade. I think that would work.
And the best kind of grout to use to go back on is the acrylic grout. Stay away from that silicone because that collects dirt and it doesn't look nice. The acrylic will stay cleaner longer than anything else you could put there.
The silicone creates valleys, doesn't it?
Move on, next one.
Go ahead.
Margaret from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Hi, Margaret.
Oh, hi.
Hi,
yes,
what's up?
Okay. I have terrible creaking in all the floors in my apartment. It started in the hallway, but now it goes all through the house.
The creaking is actually the wood either rubbing against each other or the wood rising up and down on the nails that are attaching them because the nails have loosened up over the last 100 years. And how do we fix this, Leonard?
Well, first of all, I have to make sure. Do you have parquet floors?
It could be any wood floors.
You know how you fix it? This is the only question that I know the answer to. You put talcum powder in the cracks.
Right.
Through my whole apartment?
Right. What you do is you put the baby powder, because there's really not...
Buy the cheapest stuff. Go to the 99-cent store.
Right. Okay. And you sweep it into all the cracks. Uh-huh. All over the place, like you're just dragging it around the apartment, you sweep it in, and then all the excess you sweep off, and then leave it alone, walk around on it for a little while, and then with a slightly damp rag, mop up any of the extra baby powder that's on the floor, and that should actually, what you're not doing is you're not tightening it, because tightening it means redoing the whole floor. What you're doing is you're just lubricating the wood between each other and then on the nail, and that will happen.
The creaks will disappear.
But I have, you know, some spaces in the wood, because it's a 1929 building.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to see the white talcum powder.
It'll settle to the bottom.
It'll settle to the bottom after a little bit of a while. Even just tap it down with your feet or jump up and down, or maybe invite somebody over to do a little dancing, and this way the talcum powder will go down.
Or tap it with the other side of the broom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Give it a shot and see.
I have a 23-pound cat, and when he walks from the living room through to the bedroom, it's like a grown-up.
Well, I have to tell you, for a while there, I had two cats, and when they would run around, it was like a herd of elephants.
Now, she can hit all the various parts of the wood with the tool that we are trying to find the name of for our quiz.
Yes, she could. Let's see if we have somebody
with an answer. Amy from Riverdale. Hi, you're on the air.
It's Arnie.
Arnie, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I had a ledge that we installed when I lived in New Jersey, and we used a stone chisel to edge the edging.
Well, a stone chisel is really not a stone chisel. It's a chisel for using almost any kind of thing. We're looking for a specific tool that was manufactured for that particular purpose of facing and shaping stones.
Soft stone. Thank you. We go now to Laszlong in Manhattan. Is it Laszlong?
Yes, Laszlo.
Laszlo.
What's up?
I'm here.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm not exactly sure about the tool's name, but the art of shaping stones back in those days was called napping. So I'm guessing that it's called a napper.
No, napping is a different type of process for fitting the stone into different stone places, like where you have patio and you have different types of shapes and you shape it out. This is to take blocks of stones that are maybe for a retaining wall or for a pyramid or something like that to shape the stone before you put it in place.
Well, thank you for your call. We're sorry you didn't have the right answer. We go now to Emily from Westchester. Emily, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks. I have two things, briefly. One is we have a whole house air conditioner, which we haven't even used this summer because we were away during the hottest time. And I'm wondering if I have to do anything for the filter on that. And the other question is we did run the dehumidifier in the basement. It drains right in. Yeah. Into the basement sink, so to keep the humidity down in the house. But we've had it for a long time, and our electric bill got pretty high, even though we were home for only a few days during that billing cycle. Is there a more energy efficient?
Yeah, the dehumidifiers have become more energy efficient, and like any other product, any other appliance, they all have energy ratings, and you can, you know.
So I should go to Consumer Reports,
or just go, you know, whether it's you're buying it through online, through Google or Amazon, and you can actually look at each of the manufacturers and see what their ratings are. To go back to the first, let me add to the first question. Second, is that if the air conditioning is not being used, the filters don't need to be cleaned. But I also got to say something else. If the air conditioning is on and no one is living there, the filters don't get dirty. I have an experience where I have in my second level two return airs, one in my daughter's room and one in my room. Mm-hmm. My daughter hasn't lived at home for the last 8 years, so I close the door and it just circulates. That room still gets cool, but the filter is never dirty because no one's ever in there. My room, on the other hand, it's filthy. Why? Because it's mostly dead skin and hair and some of my cat's hair and stuff like that.
So but is it, the filter that I have to clean when I do have to clean it, the thing that's in the ceiling,
If there's a filter in that thing, in that register, that's where you have to clean it. Or if it's at the air handler, it could be one of two places. If you have two filters, that's not good because that'll burn out the fan motor.
Yeah, if you mentioned in the ceiling, if that's a stiff framed filter, you can't clean them. You got to throw them away. Yeah. If it is a soft filter, like it's in a window unit, and it's malleable, then you could take that and bring it to a kitchen sink and a little shampoo or a little soap, a liquid detergent, and wash it out. And don't wring them out because you'll tear it.
Along those lines, Jill from Connecticut has a question.
Hi, I have a private home, a single home, and I have central air conditioning, and it stopped working during one of the very big heat waves, and so I called the people to come over to fix it, the repair people, And they said, oh, there's just a big chunk of ice there.
Yes.
And they let it melt and they fixed it and it's working. But what do I do to prevent the chunk of ice from coming again?
Well, let me ask you a question. Did they didn't just shut it off and get the ice, chunk of ice. They actually did some servicing to it, right? And
yes, they did. But right. They said the problem was the chunk of ice.
Well, actually, that wasn't the problem. That was the symptom. The problem was that the refrigerant wasn't at the right level in the unit. You probably had some sort of leak, and you might also continue to have some sort of leak. So if this happens again, there's probably a leak in the system, and they're going to have to track down the leak and repair it.
So there's nothing you can do to prevent it.
It's never supposed to ice up or anything like that.
The only time it's very old, but
old doesn't mean anything either. My parents had air conditioning system in their house that was there for 20 years, and until Hurricane Sandy came around, it worked perfectly and never had a problem. So, a lot of these compressors can last for a very long time. So it's because the system needed servicing.
Okay.
So I don't need to do anything.
No,
special.
Not a thing.
Thank you so much for your call. We have more people who think they have the answer to the quiz. Let's see if Elliot knows the answer. Hi, Elliot.
Hi.
What do you think it is?
Would that be an ashlar?
No, no.
No, that's not what we're looking
for. What is an ashlar?
Yeah, what is that?
I thought it had to do with those blocks that were carved in the Inca world for the pyramids and things.
No, it's not that.
No, that's not what we're looking for.
And we have Pat from Nutley. What do you think it is?
I think it's a cold chisel.
That's something I never heard of before. But what?
cold chisel is kind of like an ashlar.
Cold chisel. Oh, she said cold chisel. Oh, yeah. I thought it was something else.
Okay. Well,
a cold chisel is what the same thing that a gentleman prior to yours called in about, a chisel that just cuts off any kind of material.
And Frank from Hastings, what do you think it is?
Rubbing stone or a carborundum stone?
No, that's not it.
That's not what we're looking for.
Well, we have pretty much run out of time,
okay.
And we haven't gotten an answer. Are we going to return?
Because
with
we don't come
month?
Back for a little while. I think we ought to tell the people it either called a crandle or a bush hammer. This is a type of hammer that has on it pyramid-like teeth on both ends of it, and as you tap the surface of the stone, it cuts it away the high spots until it's nice and level. And if you look up, if anybody has a online, and you punch in the word crandle, crandall, or bush hammer, you will see many pictures of the device.
And the U-Bells will be back with us on October 9th. When what's going to happen?
We're going to show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
Thank you both so much for being with us today. We'll be seeing you on the 9th of October.
Very good.